Welcome to Bible Talk, the program that gives Bible answers to Bible questions. This program is brought to you by the St. James Church of Christ in St. James. Your speaker is Lynn Huggins, preacher with the St. James Church of Christ.
Last week on the program, we looked at some of the evidence for our faith in God and in creation as an explanation of the origin of living things. We concluded that from the evidence we have, that it is more reasonable to believe that an intelligent, all-powerful God created the heavens and the earth rather than to believe that it all happened by chance. But someone might be asking, well, what about evolution? Has not evolution been scientifically proven to be a scientific fact? And that being the case, the biblical account of God creating the heavens and the earth in 6 days just cannot be true. Well, what I want to show on today's program is that the theory of evolution has not been scientifically proven, and that those who believe in evolution as the explanation of the origin of all life forms, they believe it by faith. I also want to show that it is more reasonable to believe in creation than in evolution. Now, before we continue, we need to define our terms. What is meant by evolution? When evolution is mentioned, it is of utmost importance that a distinction be made between what G.A. Kirkcutt called the general theory of evolution and the special theory of evolution. G.A. Kirkcutt, a well-known evolutionist, in his book Implications of Evolution, wrote, and I quote, "There is a theory which states that many living animals can be observed over the course of time to undergo changes so that new species are formed. This can be called the special theory of evolution and can be demonstrated in certain cases by experiments. On the other hand, there is a theory that all the living forms in the world have arisen from a single source which itself came from an inorganic form. This theory can be called the general theory of evolution." End of quote. Well, on our program today, we're not questioning the special theory of evolution, which says that there are changes within kinds of animals. Some have called this microevolution. There is experimental evidence for this theory and is consistent with the creation view of origins. Creationists recognize and accept all the observed biological changes which evolutionists offer as proof of their general theory. What we are questioning on the program today is the general theory of evolution, or what some have called macroevolution, which says that all forms of life on earth today came from some original form of life by a connected series of changes, and that this process is a fully natural process. This is the molecules to man evolution, in which there is no God, no first cause, or no divine intervention. Well, today we're considering some of the problems with the general theory of evolution. Well, first of all, it must be emphasized that the general theory of evolution, that is, the molecules to man evolution, is not a fact of science and cannot be proven scientifically. You know, there are evolutionists, college professors, scientists that will tell you that the general theory of evolution is a fact of science. Some biology textbooks in our schools state that macroevolution is a fact of science. Well, this is absolutely not true. Do not be deceived. Again, G.A. Kirkcutt, who is an evolutionist, in his classic work, The Implication of Evolution, listed 7 assumptions upon which evolution is based, and then made this statement, and I quote, "The first point that I should like to make is that these 7 assumptions, by their nature, are not capable of experimental verification." End of quote. The first 2 assumptions listed by Kirkcutt as the building blocks of evolution were, number 1, non-living things gave rise to living material, that is, spontaneous generation occurred. And number 2, spontaneous generation occurred only once. End of quote. Kirkcutt then admitted, and I quote, "The evidence that supports it, that is, the general theory of evolution, is not sufficiently strong to allow us to consider it anything more than a working hypothesis." End of quote. And so Kirkcutt, an evolutionist, admits the theory has not been scientifically proven. And we can understand why. That which has occurred only once in the past is not observable and is not capable of experimental verification. Therefore, it is outside the realm of science and cannot be a fact of science. For something to be proven scientifically, it must be observable, repeatable, and falsifiable. And what I mean by falsifiable means that you must be able to conceive of an experiment, the failure of which will disprove the theory. Well, the general theory of evolution does not meet this criteria. John C. Whitcomb and Henry M. Morris, in their book, The Genesis Flood, wrote, and I quote, "Since historical geology, unlike other sciences, cannot deal with currently observable and reproducible events, it is manifestly impossible ever really to prove, by the scientific method, any hypothesis relating to pre-human history," end of quote. Also, Dr. Duane T. Gish, in his book, Evolution, the Fossils Say No, states, "Evolution, in this broad sense, is unproven and unprovable, and thus cannot be considered as fact. It is not subject to test by the ordinary methods of experimental science, observation, and falsification. It thus does not, in a strict sense, even qualify as a scientific theory," end of quote. Therefore, those who accept the general theory of evolution accept it by faith. But then secondly, when we look at the evidence that we have, we conclude that the general theory of evolution is not even reasonable to believe. Rather, it is more reasonable to believe in divine creation. Now, if the general theory of evolution occurred, what would we expect? Well, one thing that we would expect is that the fossil record in the Earth's crust would show simple one-celled animals in the deepest layers of the Earth's crust, and then the progression should be obvious. We would then expect to see the gradual transition of these relatively simple forms of life into more and more complex forms of life reflected in the fossil record. But the fact is, this is not the way the fossil record reads. Duane T. Gish, in his book, Evolution, the Fossils Say No, says, "The oldest rocks in which indisputable fossils are found are those of the Cambrian period. In these sedimentary deposits are found billions and billions of fossils of highly complex forms of life." He then asks, "What do we find in rocks older than the Cambrian?" He says, "Not a single indisputable multicellular fossil has ever been found in pre-Cambrian rocks," end of quote. He then said later, "From all appearances, then, based on the known facts of the historical record, there occurred a sudden great outburst of life at a high level of complexity. The fossil record gives no evidence that these Cambrian animals were derived from preceding ancestral forms," end of quote. And so the first life forms are complex and fully developed, not primitive. This is what we would expect if divine creation occurred, but it's not what we would expect with evolution. And another interesting thing about the fossil record is the absence of any intermediate forms of life. This is what evolutionists have called missing links. Gish also says in his book, "Furthermore, not a single fossil has been found that can be considered to be a transitional form between the major groups or phyla. At their earliest appearance, these major invertebrate types were just as clearly and distinctly set apart as they are today," end of quote. Charles Darwin admitted that this was a serious problem with his theory. He stated in Origin of Species, and I quote, "Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain, and this perhaps is the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against the theory. The explanation lies, as I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record," end of quote. Now notice, Darwin admits there is no clear record in the fossils for his theory of evolution, and he attributed this fact to the extreme imperfection of the geological record. You see, he evidently thought that when more fossil research was done, that the evidence would turn up. but I have read that there are now millions of fossils all cataloged and identified in museums around the world. Well, in all this evidence, don't you think there should be some support of his theory of evolution, if such support from the fossils was ever going to come? But the fact is, no evidence of missing links or transitional forms has yet been found. Well, what do we learn from the fossil record? We learn that complex life forms on Earth began abruptly and not gradually. And we learn that there are no transitional forms that are necessary to prove the general theory of evolution. And so the fossil record cries out creation, not evolution. Also, if evolution did occur, there has to be some mechanism by which it did occur. Evolution without a mechanism is like a car without an engine. It's not going anywhere. Well, how did the changes from one kind of animal to another kind occur in evolution? Well, Darwin theorized that since most species produce far more offspring than can possibly survive to maturity, there will be an inevitable struggle for existence, and only the strongest or the fittest of the species will survive, that is, the survival of the fittest. He then thought that these surviving individuals who are best fitted for their environment will then pass on their fitness to their offspring. In other words, if the parents worked hard and became physically strong and survived because of their strength, then their children would inherit their physical strength. But you see, scientists now universally agree that acquired traits are not hereditarily transmitted. And so inheriting acquired traits does not provide the method by which evolution comes about. Well, what is the mechanism? Well, evolutionists also realize that for organisms to change from one kind to another kind, the genetic material must somehow change. Today, the alleged mechanism for evolution is genetic mutations plus natural selection. It is important to emphasize here that this is the only known mechanism of evolution. The view is that nature has selected beneficial mutations and incorporated them into the various organisms, causing them to change from one kind of organism to another. But there are problems with this mechanism. First of all, mutations are random. Dr. Henry M. Morris states, there is no way to control mutations to make them produce characteristics which might be needed. Natural selection must simply take what comes, end of quote. In other words, nature is not selecting at all. Rather, nature is pressed into accepting whatever it is that appears. And then secondly, mutations are very rare, not common. And thirdly, good mutations are very, very rare. Dr. H.J. Mueller, Nobel laureate in genetics, said, and I quote, "Accordingly, the great majority of mutations, certainly well over 99%, are harmful in some way, as is to be expected of the effects of accidental occurrences," end of quote. Well, what is the conclusion to be drawn from all this? Well, we conclude that the mutation process is a negative process that tends to destroy and tear down. This is totally contradictory to the theory of forward progress on which the theory of evolution depends. The point is this. The only mechanism that evolution can come up with that explains how evolution occurred is without scientific evidence and is basically wishful thinking. Well, what have we learned today? We have learned that the general theory of evolution is not and cannot be a proven scientific fact, and those who accept it by faith. We have learned that the fossil record best fits the creation model of origins rather than the evolution model. And we have learned that the only mechanism that evolutionists can devise to explain how evolution occurred is improbable and unreasonable. Dear friend, the Bible is true when it says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth."
You have been listening to Bible Talk, brought to you by the St. James Church of Christ in St. James. You're invited to the services of the St. James Church of Christ. Sunday morning at 9:30 for Bible classes and 10:15 for worship. Sunday evening at 5 for worship. Wednesday night Bible classes at 7.
The church building is located at 685 Sydney Street in St. James, where Sydney Street and Highway D intersect. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week at the same time for Bible Talk.